The Salt Lake City School Board considers a tax increase. The federal government will now manage Utah's high-risk health pool. And Utah's congressional delegation feels confident about the future of Hill Air Force Base. You're listening to the KUER News Pod for Wednesday, May 22nd. I'm Brian Grimmett. The Salt Lake City School Board discussed the possibility of a property tax increase last night. District officials say a 3.47% increase is needed to sustain current programs and provide a salary increase for teachers. KUER's Whitney Evans reports.
The property tax increase amounts to an additional $12.65 a year to a taxpayer who owns a $100,000 home. Janet Roberts is the business administrator for Salt Lake City School District. She says even with a 2% increase in per-pupil spending the state set aside for public schools this year, there isn't enough money to cover the district's obligations and also provide a cost-of-living increase for employees. Roberts says 88% of the district's budget is in salaries and employee benefits. So without a tax increase, it would mean teacher layoffs.
We would have to cut people. That's all we could do. But where specifically, we haven't made that determination because our board's very supportive of this tax increase.
State education dollars are distributed based on enrollment, and because enrollment in Salt Lake City schools is flat, the district gets fewer dollars than schools with higher enrollment. At least one board member proposed balancing the budget by closing schools with low enrollment. Roberts says that's always an option, but
we've had $16 million worth of ongoing and $10 million worth of one-time budget cuts that we've made, significant budget cuts, and never through that process has the board considered closing schools.
Board member Rosemary Emery suggested the district is spending too much money on career and technical education. Districts get additional funding for supplying a certain amount of teachers in CTE, but Emery says it may not be worth it.
You know, we're losing a lot of money just because we're losing a lot of kids. And, you know, I keep looking at this and going, are students dropping out of school because they're not getting their 1.5 credits of CTE? Well, clearly not. Yet that is where we are putting so much emphasis of our money in from the district.
The budget hearing is scheduled for June 4th when the board will vote on the tax increase. The last time the district approved a tax hike was in 2011. Whitney Evans, KUER News.
Many Utahns with pre-existing medical conditions will see their health insurance shifted from state to federal oversight in July. After federal funding ran short for the high-risk insurance pool, state officials have refused to take on any additional costs. KUER's Andrea Smartin reports.
Utah has been administering the high-risk insurance pool with federal dollars since 2010. But when the federal government announced they were running out of funding, they gave states two options: take over the risk of additional costs themselves or return the program to federal oversight. Utah's Governor Gary Herbert proposed a third option, that the federal government allow Select Health, the insurer that administers the program for Utah, to take over and assume the risk. But the federal government refused, citing concerns about the ability to pay a third party. Robert Spendlove, the Utah governor's deputy for federal relations, says that ties the state's hands.
It's really disappointing because the state, we can do a much better job than the federal government can. We have existing contracts. We have the infrastructure. We know how to do this. We know how to serve this population. And now because of the federal government's refusal to be flexible, we're going to have to shift these people from a state program to a federal program by July 1.
Spendlove says those in the high-risk pool won't lose coverage, but they may have to pay more in premiums and out-of-pocket costs, and they may experience disruptions or reductions in service. The program is set to expire in 2014 when insurance companies can no longer deny coverage to those with pre-existing medical conditions. Andrea Smartin, KUER News.
The majority of Utah's congressional delegation met with the U.S. Air Force Chief of Staff yesterday to discuss key issues surrounding the future of Hill Air Force Base. Republican Representative Rob Bishop says he feels good about the long-term viability of Hill Air Force Base after meeting with U.S. Air Force Chief of Staff General Mark Welsh.
I am confident that Hill Air Force Base will see some employment enhancements that will be taking place in the future year.
While Bishop acknowledges the future potential of the base, he says he's frustrated with the military about the furloughs that will be served to civilian employees at Hill.
The furloughs hitting Hill's civilian workforce will be half the length as they originally projected to be. But at the same time, I still wish there were some ways in which the military could have eliminated that. And I still think there are some ways that they could have moved money around to eliminate the need for furloughs altogether.
Bishop, who represents the area surrounding Hill Air Force Base, also says the general emphasized how important the Utah test and training range is to the future of the base, and that Hill will become one of the operation centers for the new F-35 Joint Strike Fighter.
For the first time since the 1980s, the Salt Lake City Planning Division is renewing its effort to create a master plan for the city's future development. The public comment period for Plan Salt Lake began last fall, and today the official kickoff of the campaign took place at the Salt Lake City and County Building. Planning Division Director Wilf Sommerkorn says businesses and residents are an important part of this overarching program. He says he's found in his 32 years in city planning, people generally don't engage in the process until after important decisions are made.
Then all of a sudden people are like, whoa, wait a minute, now I'm really interested. And so that's always been the challenge for planners, is how do you get people engaged and involved early on in the process?
Sommerkorn says that's the problem Plan Salt Lake is trying to solve. He says the Sugar House streetcar controversy is a good example of the public remaining generally unconcerned until it affects them personally. Sommerkorn encourages business owners and residents to offer feedback online at plansaltlake.com or at other various festivals and events in the city through the year.
Governor Gary Herbert told a congressional hearing yesterday Utah does a better job managing public lands than federal managers do. Herbert was the only witness to testify at the House Subcommittee on Public Lands, chaired by Utah's Rob Bishop. A group of high-profile Republicans is deciding now whether to pursue a ballot initiative to change the way their party's candidates are nominated in Utah. The state Republican convention decided last weekend not to change the existing caucus convention system. Conservative delegates say it allows people with less personal wealth to run for public office. Former Governor Mike Leavitt is one of the leaders of the group, Count My Vote. Its proposal would allow candidates to bypass the party conventions and gather voter signatures to put a candidate on the primary election ballot. Rich McCown, who chairs the group, says they'll take a week to analyze the situation and then decide whether to move ahead. Susan Powell's family says there's an ongoing investigation by federal authorities into her disappearance more than 3 years ago. But the U.S. Attorney's Office in Utah says that's not true, though they'd be happy to help if there were new developments in the case. The West Valley Police Department announced this week it's ending the active investigation in the case. And finally, the last of five defendants accused of promoting non-existent wind power projects in Wyoming has pleaded guilty in federal court. Robert Earl Reed of Salt Lake City pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit mail and wire fraud and conspiracy to launder money. Prosecutors charged that Reed and the others used aliases, as well as the company names of Mountain State Power Group, Mountain State Power, and Sovereign Energy Partners, to take more than $4 million from investors. And that is your KUER News Pod for Wednesday, May 22nd. For the latest news and updates from around the state, visit us online at KUER.org or follow us on Twitter at KUER News. Until next time, I'm Brian Grimmett.